You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
It would be easy to mistake Sandra Cisneros' latest book, Have You Seen Marie, for a picture book meant to be read by children. Well, it is a picture book of sorts, filled with gorgeous illustrations by California-based artist Esther Hernandez, but Ms. Cisneros wrote it for adults. It tells two stories. On the surface, it's about two women searching for a lost cat, but underneath that, it's about a woman coming to terms with her mother's death. Alfred A. Knopf is the publisher, and I'm very pleased that it has brought Sandra Cisneros back to our show today. Hello.
Hi, I'm glad to be back.
You were here last 3 years ago to celebrate the 25th anniversary of the publication of your award-winning novel, The House on Mango Street. And that book, I think, has sold about 5 million copies already. It's required reading in middle schools, high schools, universities across the U.S. Did you write it with an adult audience in mind, only to find out that it could be appreciated by teenagers as well?
Well, you know, that's the amazing thing. I wrote it for very sophisticated teenagers who were living adult lives, kids who had dropped out of school and had lived lives that even heads of state would never imagine. And I wrote it for them. And I found later that I would have this following that would be much younger and much older. And a couple of years ago when I went to China, I was astonished at how well-received and loved it is in China. So my readers were grandmothers, mothers, housewives, children, especially little ones. I just couldn't believe it.
Although you couldn't check on the translation and find out how
No, but I did know it was a good translation.
Since then, you've published another novel, a collection of short stories, a couple of volumes of poetry, and two children's books. How did you come to write a book about a lost cat? Is it based on a real incident?
Yes, it's based on a real incident. It didn't happen exactly like that. I had a writer come and stay at a residency that we had created in my foundation, the Macondo Foundation. And she was one of the writers that was coming to write. And she brought two cats with her, and one escaped. And, of course, here she is in a new town, doesn't know anyone, lost her pet, crying. And the last thing I wanted was to leave my bedroom. I'd been agoraphobic since my mother died. And I just was frightened of running into anyone, and if they chatted or smiled at me the wrong way, I might burst into tears.
You say that you'd been spending most of your time alone before she arrived with the cat, but you were 53 years old at the time.
Yes.
You've been living independently for many years. Were you surprised that your mother's death left you feeling so,
you know,
bereft,
daughters
like
and
an orphan?
Daughters and mothers have very complex, difficult relationships. I was my father's clone, but I had a tempestuous relationship with my mother, even though I loved her and she loved me. You know, we were pebbles in each other's shoe. And when she died, I had no idea I was going to have such a difficult time.
And you, afterward, and for this book, you say that your doctor offered to prescribe antidepressants for you after she died, but you decided not to take them.
Well, to me, it seemed antithetical to the work I do. I need to feel things very deeply, regardless of what the emotion is. How can I write if I'm numb? So I thought, I can't write my way through this grief if I'm taking pills. And the doctor was surprised. She had no idea that writers write from that place of deep feeling.
So did writing the book help you deal with the grief?
Yes. I wrote the book. I wrote an essay. And I installed an altar that's now at the Hispanic Cultural Center in Albuquerque. So the process of creating this installation and of, you know, using words in nonfiction and using words in fiction, all of them helped me to compost that grief.
In your afterword, you wrote that there are several things that you wish someone had told you about death before your mother died. What sorts of things do you wish you'd known?
Well, one, I wish somebody had told me that I was going to feel like an orphan when my mother died. I think we think of orphans as being these hapless characters in novels that are children, you know, that are about kids. You don't think about being an adult and feeling like a motherless child, but you are a motherless child, and you feel as frightened as a child.
You mentioned that the story begins when this writer comes to San Antonio. Her name in the book is Rosalind. Is that her real name?
Her name is Rosalind. It's based on writer Rosalind Bell from Louisiana, who lives in the Northwest now.
So she had driven with her cat Marie for 3 days. Now, based on personal experience, I know cats usually do not enjoy car trips.
No, they don't, and they usually cry the whole way. I've had two cats travel crying all the way from Albuquerque to San Antonio, so I can attest to that.
I once gave a cat antidepressants for a long car ride.
Well, but then that cat wouldn't be able to write poetry.
No, but she did. Instead of crying, she kind of whimpered.
Oh, worse.
So how long after they arrived did Marie disappear?
Like the next day. The next day. And I felt obligated as the, you know, director of this foundation, and I live across the street from the house where we would house the writers. I thought, oh, no, now I've, and it was a weekend. I couldn't send her to someone else. I said, oh, my God, now I've got to go outside. And I was living in that state where, you know, you don't comb your hair and you don't care. You know, I was in that
you
kind of
grief. You weren't even greeting the writers who were coming to your retreat?
No, I would not. I'd send somebody else. I just couldn't face people. I was that bereft. I was just in that place where you don't care what you look like. You don't want to see anyone. You can burst into tears at any moment. And my mom had died November 1st, and here it was mid-March, so it was very raw. Suddenly I felt like, okay, if I lost one of my pets, how would I feel? So I was out there with her. And this woman's very charming, very gregarious. You know, she could have run for mayor after chatting up the block. And I just was shadowing her.
And handing out flyers and talking to neighbors.
Yes.
Are the people you've included in your book based on actual people who live near you in San Antonio?
They are. There were some people that in real life we met when we were out there shaking hands and passing out flyers. And some people came to me when I was at my desk once I decided I need to write the story down. I started thinking about all my neighbors who I've lived next to for 20 years, and I decided to include people who had had a death or a loss of some kind. And after you stay stationary for 20 years, you start realizing every house on your block has had a loss.
But you also say that you were living in San Antonio. You've been there for 20 years. But you were somewhat reclusive. You're not the kind of person who organizes block parties.
No, I'm not. I'm the kind of person that waves and runs in the house so they don't distract me from whatever story is being born in my head at that moment.
Well, this is what writers do to some degree, but some of them like to go out afterward. But part of the writing process is being happy sitting in a room alone.
Yes, that's right. And then the other part is complaining about sitting alone in your room.
And then complaining about going on a tour and having
to
talk
leave
to other
that
people.
Room.
Can't win. My guest is Sandra Cisneros, whose latest book is Have You Seen Marie? With illustrations by Esther Hernandez. Your story's narrator is greeted warmly by most of her neighbors. Some of them offer advice. Others give her food. And the book feels kind of like a love letter to the neighborhood and its diversity. Did you intend it that way?
Well, you know, I'm always complaining about San Antonio and saying it's behind the times and trying to kick it in the butt. And, you know, I'm the first one to complain about San Antonio because I live there. But on the other hand, I love my block. I love the river behind my house. I love many things that San Antonio gave me, an affordable housing for a woman who arrived as a writer, and security and safety. But, you know, I feel I've outgrown that period of safety and security. The river behind my house is being developed. There are pedestrians behind my gate. My dogs bark every few minutes because someone's back there. So I've lost what I had, which was a little wildlife sanctuary.
So are you leaving San Antonio?
I am leaving, and I didn't realize that this was going to be my goodbye letter because I wrote the book before I made that decision.
There's a wonderful French film from the late 90s called When the Cat's Away, which is about a woman who loses her cat. Somebody's minding her house, and she goes around the neighborhoods of Paris and learns an awful lot about her neighbors that she couldn't have learned otherwise. Maybe it's a good thing to lose a cat sometimes.
I think that cat drew me out of my house and made me realize that my mother was out there under the trees and under the clouds and with the birds. And, you know, that was something I needed, to be yanked out of my solitude and my dark bedroom and to reconnect with things of the spirit. Because we forget when we're grieving, yes, we are in a place of absolute sadness, but our heart is also open to absolute joy. And I've forgotten that.
Didn't you make national news when you first moved to San Antonio? You bought a house in this historic district, the King William section, and then painted it purple.
Well, I didn't paint it purple. It was periwinkle.
Okay.
I beg to differ.
Well, but that's not a typical color, and some people objected. Had they forgiven you by this time?
Well, it wasn't a matter of forgiveness. It was a matter of historical exclusion. Mm-hmm. Because if you know the palette of colors from the Southwest, there are many periwinkle-colored houses in that part of the world, especially if you travel in Mexico, and, you know, and if you had recorded the colors that existed in the Mexican homes. But that was historically excluded when we look at documentation of houses in San Antonio. However, those colors were approved if they were created by an Anglo architect and put in a restaurant or a home that they designed. The issue was that my house was in a historical neighborhood and the people in positions of power were looking at a European palette. So I opened up a can of worms. I didn't intend to. I just thought, this is a great color that will go with this beautiful light. It certainly fits in with my historical memory, and I found myself in opposition to the historic preservationists.
Well, anyone who's been to a town in Mexico knows that the houses are all wonderfully colored.
Yes.
And that's part of the charm.
Yes, but afterwards, it ended happily. You know, I got to keep my colors, and the people on the review panel are more colorful, too.
And one of the neighbors is knitting something purple, not periwinkle. It reminds your narrator of how her mother used to knit ugly scarves that no one wanted to wear, and she wishes she still had one of those scarves. We've all had that kind of moment. You suddenly get this pang of recognition, and then you have to get past the unhappy feeling that brings.
That's right. My mom did knit ugly scarves no one wanted to wear. And when I was writing this, I thought, damn, I wish I had one of those ugly scarves just to hang on to and blow my nose and wipe away my tears.
As I mentioned earlier, the book contains beautiful drawings by Esther Hernandez. Did you know from the start that you wanted this to be a book with pictures?
Well, it started as a short story. I thought it was going to be part of one of my future collections. And I started reading it on the 25th anniversary tour for House, and it started doing a strange magic of really impacting an audience. Then I thought it would make a great book.
So
great
you
medicine.
Were telling the story.
Telling it out loud.
Do you think that the oral tradition has been lost in modern
literature?
Not
in my neighborhood. No, in my community, in indigenous communities, Mexican-American communities, not at all.
At least one critic has compared this book to a long poem. Did you think of it that way?
No, I just talk that way.
I understand you've got several other projects in the works, including a collection of essays and a children's book. And is it true that you're working on a screenplay for House on Mango Street?
Well, I have an outline. Whether it will become a screenplay remains to be seen, but yes.
So somebody has obviously talked to you about doing something.
Well, yes, but we need investors. Anybody out there? We'll see.
Meanwhile, you got the equivalent of something like a screenplay here, because you got all these pictures that tell the story the way
Wouldn't
a storyboard would.
Wouldn't that make a
would.
Wonderful little movie with those illustrations? I hope that can happen one day.
Well, we will see. You're going to have to enlist Esther Hernandez to do animation as well. She is an internationally acclaimed visual artist who's in the permanent collections of the Smithsonian, American Art Museum, Library of Congress, San Francisco Museum of Modern Art, the Museo Casa Estudio Diego Rivera y Frida Kahlo in Mexico City.
Yeah, she's not a book illustrator. This is her first book illustrations that she's done.
And Sandra Cisneros, who's the author of, as I said, many books, including The House on Mango Street. This one is called Have You Seen Marie? It is published by Knopf, and I want to thank you so much for being on our show today.
Thank you.